You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Talent and hard work, and then you combine the two. Like, I was like, okay, this is what I'm good at. And if I lean into this and work really hard at being good at what I already have a little advantage in, then I might be able to become elite in it. And so that was part of the decision of being a big wave guy.
I'm Justin Jay. As a photographer, I've gotten to shoot rock stars, hip-hop moguls, world-class athletes, and some other truly extraordinary subjects. I'm fascinated by the backstories and life experiences that help shape these compelling people. The right photograph can reveal quite a lot about someone, but some stories can't be told with just a picture. Sometimes you need to sit down, listen, and dig a little deeper. This is The Plug.
We can all relate to the frustration of being grounded by a parent at some point in our lives. You imagine your friends all out together having an unprecedented level of fun while you're stuck at home. The disappointment of missing out on the excitement feels devastating. Today's guest recently experienced a similar brush with FOMO. The Eddy Aikau is one of the most prestigious and highly anticipated events in surfing. Competing in the contest can be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for big wave surfers to showcase their skills and courage. Sadly, a recent back injury forced our guest to withdraw from the competition. He watched from the sidelines as his friends surfed some of the best waves in Waimea history. So how does one balance the exhilaration of witnessing one of the most thrilling days in competitive surfing with the exasperation of not getting to participate in it? We'll find out as we sit down for a chat with the younger brother of a two-time world champion who's worked tirelessly to make a name for himself by surfing some of the most consequential waves on the planet. Today, big wave surfer, social media personality, and North Shore native, Mr. Nathan Florence.
Yep, perfect, thanks.
All right, cool, let's get into this. Nathan Florence, good to see you, man. Thanks for taking time out.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Stoked to be on the show.
So I'll just jump right in. The Nate and Koa podcast, I'm loving it. You guys are what, like 4 episodes in now?
Dude, so we've been wanting to start like a few months. We were like just kind of sandbagging around, procrastinating. We're always laughing because we're like, we're the biggest procrastinators that we know of each other. So we're laughing. We didn't start for months, even though we wanted to. And it started because we both went on Bert Kreischer's podcast and he was like, dude, you guys are like epic together. You need to start one. We were like, we both have YouTube channels. We're both pretty busy. And we're like, you know what? let's do something together. We have these big audiences, like, it'll be an easy jump start. And so we started it roughly 15 days ago. We have 4 episodes. We're going to film another one this week. And we've hit, I think we're at like 12,000 subs on YouTube. Already monetized the channel, killing it. We're having the best time doing it. Like, we're like looking at each other like, this is the best thing we ever did.
Wow. Well, I mean, the thing is, I binged a couple shows this week. And, you know, obviously you guys have a great rapport. And obviously you have a lot of insight into not just surfing, but specifically like the North Shore and the culture. But I think what my favorite part about it is, like, you guys just seem like you're having fun. Like, and it really translates into the show. It's a fun listen.
Yeah, dude. Well, that's part of it. It's like, we would sit, we're hanging out, you know, we're best friends. So we're surfing, and when we're not surfing, we're doing that. What that show is what we're doing together, like, on a weekly, daily basis, because we're friends, you know? So we were like, dude, we're always talking about this stuff anyway. People will find it interesting. It's just surf geek mode stuff. So, like, yeah, let's just do it and give it to everyone else and have them, our communities, be a part of our conversations.
You know, the format of a podcast is a little bit more controlled than, you know, maybe some of the other stuff you're used to, like a vlog where you just kind of put up a session and then maybe talk about it. Like, what have been some of the challenges that you've experienced, like, translating to a podcast format? I mean, did it come pretty natural, or have you guys noticed improvement?
So it's interesting. It's easier than, I would say, the vlog situation, is because it's like you said, you base it off a surf or a day or something like that, whereas the podcast is just a conversation. And it's funny because you can sit there and, like, I was worried, like, oh, maybe we'll, like, they'll be too short, we'll run out of things to talk about or whatever. But because we're just having, like, a pretty natural conversation, all of a sudden I'll look and I'll be like, dude, we're 45 minutes in, I gotta edit this thing, like, let's cut it. Like, I'm kind of sure, like, we found we have a really easy time doing them. So we're pretty stoked. No difficulties yet. The only difficulty we had was, like, setting up, like, we both have these nice podcast mics. We do not know how to use them. And so they just sit there. We have 2 handy cams, and this is the most hilarious thing. We don't have a studio or anything. Every location we filmed in has been different. We just put 2 handy cams on the countertop or, like, a pile of books, and we sit down and press record and upload that.
Well, it's funny. I know. I mean, I think standards are slowly rising again, but it was pretty fascinating during COVID when, you know, the standards of broadcasting pretty much just went out the window, and you had, like, literally, like, network newscasters, like, in their living room with, like, an internet mic. You know what I mean? Like, the level of expectations have really been lowered over the last couple of years. Yeah,
totally. But on that point, it's, to me, like, I'm such a geek for content and what works and what doesn't. And what I've found is, like, because of that, and because people can and will relate to that, to this less produced setup, they interact more and they feel like they're part of it more. And almost the less produced it is, the more they can feel like they get it and that person is similar to them. And when they feel that connection, then they're, like, a way more hardcore subscriber or fan or listener, you know? And so it's almost, to me, like, content has been it went to this crazy pinnacle of production. Who's the most produced and on it and cleanest and best editing and transitions and all that, to, like, let us just show us the raw. We want to see everything.
Yeah, because something produced like that already exists. It's called a TV show, you know?
Yes, dude, so true.
Well, I have to say, you know, after a year and a half of emailing back and forth, I do take some solace in the fact that even you have not been able to get your brother John on the podcast yet.
Oh my God, dude.
He's a hard get.
He is the biggest recluse ever. And, like, I heard Cody's like, let's get him on. I'm like, I already know how this is gonna go. He'll be like, yeah, tomorrow. And then, like, if he knows I'm calling to ask about it, he won't answer. Like, he's so funny. But the guy's a fucking, he's got so much going on. He's a world champ. He's just got all these asks, and I get it.
Totally understand. I just, like, you can't help but ask.
He's getting good at just throwing hard no's out.
For someone who's booking the show, I have the utmost respect for a hard no. The yes, and then it never happens. That's anguishing, you know?
Totally.
You know, so we had Pat O'Connell on the podcast recently, and we were talking specifically about John's pretty conscious choice to have a relatively small social media footprint and instead focus on starting his brand and developing Florence Marine X. And it seemed like you chose a really different path. It seemed like you've really leaned into social media and really leveraged that as a tool to help you lead the lifestyle and surf, you know, big waves and travel and do all the things you get to do. Is the difference in those two approaches, is that a product of the differences in your personalities between the two of you, or am I reading too much into it? In other words, like, you get up in the morning, you have to film something, put it online, put it out for the world. Does that come easier to you than to him?
It does. So it's interesting. It's kind of like two parts. One, personality, I think, although John has a similar personality, it's just not socialized. He doesn't want it to be out in a social environment. It's just for his very close crew. The funny thing about John is, I would say, oh, it's content. It's like, I love putting out content, but he loves that too. It's just different. He has been doing this content thing since before I can remember. Like, he was editing his own things on iMovie. He edited his first films. And when surf movies were big, he was really into it. He made a ton of films at the time. He was taking the GoPro out and filming. He was hiring me when I was a kid. And I was like, I want to go sandslide. He's like, can you just film me for 1 hour? I would sit on the beach and film him for 1 hour. Then I would go run and play in the shore break. You know, like, he was all about content. And he's been that way his whole life. View from a Blue Moon, he's made some of the best surf films ever made. Still to this day, he's putting out tons of stuff. He has his own production company, Parallel Sea. So he is a content geek as much as I am. It's just in a different way. He loves a good edit, a good film, a good quality, crazy, red, cinematic experience versus I'm way more like now, this happened, it's up. I want to put it up. I want to do the vlog thing. I'm going to be into Instagram. You know, like, he's totally tuned out of his Instagram. He doesn't care for it. It takes too much mental energy for him. He wants to just go surfing, be the best surfer he can, and take the time and make a really great edit down the road. Whereas I'm like, no, I want to bring this surf experience to the people following me. You know, I want to give it to them immediately. And I have a better, I think, personality. My personality is more like socializing. So I have a better personality for that type of content. It's two different, it's the different sides of the coin. I'm the vlog Instagram guy. Instant gratification for subscribers and followers, whereas he's like, no, I'm going to come out with an insane edit once a year.
And it seems like there's really room for both of those lanes. I mean, if you look at like what there's kind of these like mini media empires that are starting on the North Shore between Koa Smith, JOB, yourself. I mean, and some of the followers, not necessarily even surf fans. You know, it's a lifestyle brand.
Totally. You'll see the ones that will get culled out. There's guys that are like, they complain about the YouTube life or having to always put out content. Like, I've never had the thought of like, this sucks. Like, I have fun doing it. I enjoy doing it. It comes really easy to me. I have so much footage stacked up from that summer that I'm just trying to edit through. Like, if I had a team of 10 editors, I could have put out 10 times the amount of edits and sessions. There's so many sessions that have not been seen. You know, like, I have an insane time doing it. But I hear some of these other guys complaining about it. They're like, oh man, what am I going to put out this week? What am I going to produce this week? And I'm like, you're thinking about it the wrong way. Like, what are you trying to produce if you're running a vlog? A vlog is like a daily video log, right? Like, you're overthinking it. You're not trying to make a film. You're just trying to give people an insight into your daily life.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So, you know, we're in the middle of one of the best North Shore winters in recent memory. I mean, some of the best competitive surfing in recent memory, the most prestigious surf contest the Eddie Aikau just ran under just jaw-dropping conditions. You were not able to participate in that event due to an injury. And as a big wave surfer, I can't even imagine like the heartbreak that you must have felt that day. You know, I mean, John, your brother, he's no stranger to having to sit out high profile events due to injury as well. I mean, did you guys talk about that at all? I mean, did he have any perspective for you?
Dude, that's a great question. Yeah. It's funny. A lot of people were like, dude, how did it feel to sit out of that? And this, but not many asked that question of like, oh, you should go and take advice from John, who's had that same experience. And I did. I told him, like, I'm very open with how I feel and what I'm thinking. And I hated to miss that event. Like, it just killed me. Like, I was like, I'm not even gonna go down there. And I went down there and I didn't walk away for 9 hours. I just stared. I watched every single heat. I watched every single ride because I'm a fan of big wave surfing at the end of the day. And it was the best day ever. And it was the worst day ever because the more historical it got and the bigger the sets got, the more sad I got I wasn't out there sharing those moments with my friends. And I did talk to John after and before, during, after. He laughed during. He's like, dude, I know. Like, this sucks. Like, he's like, oh, my God, I feel bad. I don't even want to tell you anything about my experience because he's like, you already know. But he was like, dude, nowadays, like, he's like, it all just passes. Like, you know, the way things are these days, a week will go by and everyone will be on to the next event. And not everything is so all-consuming and all-important as it seems to be. And he kind of told me that, and he's like, I took it as like, dude, that's so true. Like, there will be another year. It will run. I'll have another chance. There's going to be another season. There's going to be another shootout. There's going to be another crazy historical swell at some point, even if it takes 10 damn years to do it. You know, so it made me feel better. And I was just like, oh, whatever. I've had a great year. Don't need to push it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I did think it was interesting that Kelly Slater, he had a seat in the event and chose not to surf. I guess he got up and just wasn't feeling it. Maybe he had a premonition that he was going to get hurt or perhaps worse. But I mean, did you see the cruel irony in one of the most competitive surfers in history choosing not to be in an event that you wanted to be in but couldn't because of an injury? I mean, what was that all about?
Yeah, no, I didn't even think about it that way. But I related to him. I knew exactly, like, if you know, you know, dude. Some days you wake up and you know it's not your day. You're like, yeah. You're like, I just don't feel it. Like, I'm not excited. You have all of the fear that comes with one of those swells. Usually it's good fear. It's you're scared and you're like, oh, like, I'm going to get it today. But some days you wake up and you just don't feel good. You feel like your reflexes are slow. You feel like, I don't know if I want to be out there. And I respect Kelly so much for making that decision, especially the way he is, how competitive he is. Like, he's still doing the tour after that insane career, you know? Like, he's still all about it. But him, like, just knowing to be like, nah, I'm not going to push it on the day I don't feel it.
Yeah, I could tell from his interviews. I mean, he was torn too, but you got to respect just the trust that he had in himself to walk away from that.
100%. And to me, like, that's him knowing himself to the point of he's like, hey, I don't feel it, but if I go out there, I'm 100% not gonna just like, there's guys out there that aren't as competitive, so they'll go out and they're older. There's a few guys in the event, they didn't try to go sit in the inside bowl and catch the biggest, gnarliest doublet. They rode some nice fun waves. Like, look at Shane and Pete Mel. They're like high-fiving on an insane fun wave, like gnarly still, it's giant Waimea. But they're not like going all out ballistic. Kelly, he
doesn't
knows
have that gear
well enough to be like, if I'm in that heat, I'm gonna push myself really deep. I'm gonna sit next to John. I'm gonna try and go on something really, really crazy. And if he's not feeling it, then he makes that call to be like, no, I'm not even gonna allow myself to put myself there. And on top of it, the guy that gets in because Kelly pulls out. People may not realize, but this is Chris Owens, who's like the biggest diehard Waimea fan there is. Not just Eddie fan, but like his dream has always been to be in the Eddie. I cannot believe he has never been just an invitee. Like, this guy lives and breathes specifically big waves in Waimea. He's up at 4 a.m. every day. He's at the coffee shop by Foodland. He's forecasting Waimea all the time. He's older now, and he's out there on the biggest days of every session of every winter, sitting the deepest, catching the best waves. Like the guy that got in, although he was injured and he was bummed he couldn't compete at his fullest, the guy that got in, Chris Owens, because Kelly pulled out, like, that was just, like, the coolest thing. That was, like, best case scenario. It was, like, a lifeguard winning the Eddie, you know? Like, it was, like, a micro of that.
That's a pretty cool gift. Yeah. So even an incredibly gifted and talented surfer like Felipe Toledo, for instance, has been criticized in the past for just not having it in his constitution to throw himself over ledges and surf waves of consequence like what you do all the time. And I'm curious, like, where does that desire come from for you? Like, is it as simple as the reward from a big wave when everything goes right is worth the risk and the consequence of when it doesn't? I mean, is it that simple or is it something deeper?
It is that simple for one level. It's also, I think you got to think about it into, like, for me, it was, I leaned into that because that to me was a strength and something I showed promise in versus like small wave technical surfing. Like it was just such a struggle and uphill battle, and I just didn't put the time in, but I knew like as soon as I did something in higher consequence, my body reacted in a way, my instincts were faster. I made things I didn't think I could make. And to me, that was a strength. And I was like, I'm going to lean hard into a strength. It's that age old thing, like talent and hard work. And then you combine the two. Like, I was like, okay, this is what I'm good at. And if I lean into this and work really hard at being good at what I already have a little advantage in, then I might be able to become elite in it. And so that was part of like the decision of being a big wave guy. And as far as going back to your question of like, is it just a different mindset? It really is. It is a different thing. You have to enjoy it. You know, like you see, I look at it now as like the younger generation. I see it happening. Say 10 of them are come up as surfers. One or two are going to be going out on the big days. You'll see them all of a sudden start surfing Waimea. They're ordering guns. They want it. And you'll see 8 or 9, they're over it. And they go head in into competition. It's just like, maybe you're just built that way. To me, it's like some are just built in that they react to fear differently and they react in an on way versus a turned off way.
Have you had a change in perspective being married and in terms of facing consequence and the notion of danger?
I have not. I've been with my wife for 10 years, maybe going on 11 now. And so we've been married 2 or 3 years now. But so I feel like I've been married a lot longer. We've been married like 10 years. But yeah, I feel like that'll happen with kids. And I feel like I've seen that happen with other big wave surfers when they've had a child come into the mix. But no, like my wife is as motivated as I am. And she's so into her career as well. And we're both like, and we both understand like what needs to be done, that no change, no holding back as far as that. The only times I felt something like that was this year. We did a lot of solo traveling, not solo traveling, it was just me and my wife. But I had some sessions where I was usually, you know, I'm out there. It's my life is in my friend's hands. And when something goes wrong, like I'm going to be able to go in and get them, or they're going to come get me. But all of a sudden, when I was surfing some of these dangerous slabs in Northern Europe, and the only person on the beach was my wife, and it's freezing water, that was when I thought about it. And I was like, you know what? If something goes bad right now, I get knocked unconscious. She's on the beach with a handy cam. She don't have a wetsuit, nothing. Like, this is going to traumatize her and be so bad for her. Like, I cut those sessions out just because, in case anything went wrong, I did not want her to have to live with the trauma of having to try to do something and fail because it's just too fucking gnarly of a situation.
Yeah.
Water's too cold and she don't have a wetsuit and the waves are too big and then her maybe perish because she's trying to, like, I was like, I cannot put her in that situation ever again. So like, no. There was that. But as far as pushing in those sessions when there is the safety teams and everything like that, it's full steam ahead.
So, you know, I've gotten to photograph a lot of musicians over the years, and there's this common theme that they talk about of like the energy of the crowd and how that affects their performance. And you know, I've been fortunate enough to shoot on stage at some really big festivals with hundreds of thousands of people. And there's definitely something there. There's an energy, but I mean, that description is largely, it's metaphorical. I mean, when you're surfing Waimea or Jaws, like there's literal energy in the water. There's literal hundreds of tons of water moving back and forth. I mean, what do you get from that? Is it humility or is it inspiration or what does that connection feel like?
It's so interesting because when it goes bad, it causes you to feel so small. Like when you fall on a Jaws wave or one of these big waves, you become this pinprick thing. Like, you are so overpowered, so beyond overpowered in that situation that you're forced to take everything as like second by second, let's see if I survive. Like I can only do so much here. I can pull my vest and I can hope for the best, but like this wave is so powerful, it will 100% do what it wants with me. And then that moment of no choice, you know, like you're for sure going over the falls, or you've taken the drop and you're falling, and 100%, there's no getting out of it. There's no option. There's no, hey, I'm going to lean into this, or hey, no, I'm going to back out of this. Like, you're already in it. And that feeling is part of why it makes it so epic in big waves, because some of my most high experiences on adrenaline have been from big wipeouts versus like the wave of my life or something. That's a different kind of high. The big wipeouts and having survived and put yourself into that situation of like helplessness is just a crazy, crazy feeling. And it just shows you, gives you such respect. As soon as you conquer a few waves, and you might think, hey, like, I can read the ocean. Like, maybe I've got an edge. It quickly shows you, like, no, you're nothing compared to this swell that's moved across the oceans, thousands and thousands of miles. This pure form of energy in the form of a wave is coming. And it just shows you, like, you, bro, you're so small in what I'm doing.
I mean, what is that split second like? Let's say, for instance, when you know you're going over the falls or you've made a mistake. I mean, is it like akin to, you know, like when you stub your toe, there's a very specific amount of time between the impact and the sense of pain, and it's a very specific time frame. Is it similar to that times 1,000? I mean, you know it's coming.
Yes, definitely. You'll never, ever be more aware of your surroundings and your situation and yourself. And in a state, for me, it becomes this insane, narrowed state of readiness. And I see so much, like, people are like, you know, just stay calm. I've never felt calm. Like, is your heart rate just cruising at 80 going over on a 25-footer? Like, are you going to be calm? No. You're like 160, like, pure dump of adrenaline into your system. And every time I'm doing this, all I can think is just bracing body and in a complete state of readiness, like as if your whole mind is clear, all your reflexes, all your peripheral, all your senses are completely open and ready just to react to whatever happens and hope it's in the benefit.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a cool little thing that happens. And I believe it's just like people are like, you revert back to these really base instincts, back to probably what caveman instincts were before full conscious thought took over.
Wow. Because, I mean, there's been a lot of injuries on the North Shore, very experienced big wave surfers. Well, obviously yourself, Billy Kemper, Makua Rothman, and, you know, even as a intermediate surfer at best, like I've experienced some harrowing situations like in head high waves. Like, how does somebody survive a 25-foot wipeout, or how does somebody survive a 15-foot wipeout at pipe? I mean, is there some analogy between, let's say, a pro skater who attempts a trick 50 times and falls on the concrete and is relatively unscathed, as opposed to somebody who maybe doesn't have the skill set of knowing how to fall and they try it once and they're in the hospital? I mean, is there an analogy there?
100%. 100% it is the same in surf. There is better ways to fall. And you learn that over only being in the sport for a long time. You learn to move your body in ways. And if you're getting pulled over, you can thrust yourself out of the lip to avoid the main impact. There is small things that become instinctual that you do. And you see that with like the people that often sometimes get injured are in smaller waves, is like they'll have the same injury as like a pro would have in a really big situation. And oftentimes those are like where you have absolutely no control of your body movement and you slam the reef when the elite will get injured. But in the smaller stuff, you'll see someone get injured with the same injury or something because they let themselves fly through the water head first. Like if I'm moving through the water head first, I'll pivot my body. I'll spin my body to where I'm hoping my hands are going to be hitting whatever's coming at me. There's a sixth sense that kind of happens, and you can talk to other surfers about it. It's like, I've had my eyes completely closed, and whether it's just us being underwater so much that it's some instinctual reading of pressure and depth, but I've completely eyes closed, spinning, known the reef was coming, and just put my hand out just exactly where I thought it would be, put my hand out to reef, blocked a hit, or just knowing and turned the last second and got my hands in front of me, or my elbows and knees in front of me, before the reef has come up to meet me. Like, talked about this with my friends, my brothers, other surfers, same experiences.
So, I mean, it seems like, you know, you can have endurance training, you can have breath control and all of this preparation, but I mean, you're going to get lit up eventually if you're surfing waves like that.
100%. At the end of the day, it's Russian roulette. Like, it's the ocean. And to me, it's insane that there isn't more deaths and injuries. The amount people are surfing waves of consequence now, the numbers, the sheer odds are so high. I just, like, you see those big Tahiti sessions where guys are towing and not making those 25-foot waves on a slab, a reef. And you're just like, how did you not die? Like, maybe there's mechanics going on. Maybe it's water hitting an immovable object and so you just get brushed away. Like, weird things going on like that. But you would have to bring in a physicist to break that down. But yeah. I believe the injuries will increase if we increase at this rate of pushing.
But what about breakdown? Like, to the uninitiated, you look at, say, Jaws versus Waimea, they're just like, oh, they're just two big, massive waves. But, like, for Waimea, which generally isn't really like a barreling wave.
Yeah, Waimea is more of a slab for sure. And it actually is a barreling wave. It's a great wave. And I saw waves during the eddy that blew their guts out into the channel. Like,
wow.
But everyone is so content with trying to just go straight on these waves. And it's been happening for so long in Waimea that that's just how that people think the wave is surfed. Like, I 100% believe you gave the top five young guys a session out there on a day that they're not competing for the eddy, but their focus is to pull in and get barreled and make it. You're going to see 20-foot barrels get ridden and made at Waimea.
Wow.
100%. But every day it's breaking and it's not in the event, there's 15 guys going straight on the shoulder. You know, Waimea is a crazy barreling wave, and so is Jaws, but they're just surfed differently. And Waimea is more of a slab. It comes out of the deep water and hits a single shelf. It doesn't peel like Jaws does, you know? So they're different structured waves, but they both are big barreling waves.
Wow. So, I mean, what percentage would you say of being a good surfer is the physical agility of standing on a wave, riding a board, versus the entire knowledge of being able to read the ocean, of like when to paddle out, where to sit, where not to be? I mean, is that what separates somebody like a Kelly Slater from a pretty good surfer?
100%. You can take an incredible athlete, perfect agility, super fit, crazy endurance, and if they don't surf or do water sports, you put them on a surfboard in the water and they're going to look like the clumsiest athlete you've ever seen in your life. You know, it takes that years of ocean reading combined with that fit athlete to get something like a Kelly or a Jamie or a John, where they're reading so much subtle clues in that the ocean is giving and positioning themselves to be in the perfect spot at the perfect time. They're reading the angle of set waves, thinking, oh, because of the angle of this one, 2 minutes out, that wave set coming is probably going to be a more westerly direction. I'm going to paddle deeper at pipe. Like, that's the kind of forward reading of the ocean that one can develop with years and years and years of being in the ocean and looking at waves. But on top of that, some just have a little better reading, and then that's what creates the Johns and the Kellys and the Jamies. And I say those three because pipe is such a good place to measure that. You will see those guys, even with 100 guys out, they are always somehow right there in the best spot. And you'll see them randomly be sitting there, and they'll just all of a sudden take off paddling. And there's no wave they're paddling for, but 2 minutes later, a wave appears over there. And you're like, what the heck? I have that ability too, but I feel like they have it just a 10 seconds before. You know, it's an edge over the average.
And it's fascinating because, I mean, to people who don't know that, there's a similar situation with photographers. Like, I've been around people that are just like, how does this guy always seem to be in the right place at the right time to get the shot?
Yep.
And they're like, well, it's not by accident, I'll tell you that much.
No. You have a sense for when that shot's going to come.
Yeah. And just an experience, too. You years of observation, you know, doing
yes.
what you do.
Totally.
And do you think that skill set has the potential to be lost with so much emphasis on wave pools and the kind of gymnastics of aerials and that type of surfing?
100%. The wave pools, there'll be a generation of wave pool surfers and it probably won't carry over into the ocean. But maybe it'll develop in itself as a sub-sport, you know? It's really weird to learn the wave pool timing, go from ocean to wave pool and then go back. And so I don't think, like, maybe new tricks that you can practice and feel out a new grab or a new flip, and then eventually get that 1 out of 100 air section that mimics it in the ocean. But reading, no, it's going to throw you off majorly to be thinking you're going to go from a wave pool where it's the same every single time to the ocean where it's just chaos.
Never the same.
Yeah. No.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than 1 billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify. It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit 1 million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So I want to talk about your relationship with your brother for a second. And I'm sure so many people are constantly asking you, like, oh, are you guys competitive? And, you know, I've heard you say that you're actually really not that competitive, largely because you almost put him on a different level than yourself. And then those lines are so clearly drawn. You know, he's 2-time world champion, phenomenal surfer. But it seems like in the last couple of years, I mean, you've really been able to come out from underneath his shadow and really establish yourself as like a very experienced, you know, big wave rider. And it seems like so many fans growing up watching Andy and Bruce Irons and the rivalry between them, they find it hard to believe that you guys don't have some degree of that. And I'm wondering, has your relationship or the rivalry between you guys, has that changed over the course of the years with your successes?
We're super competitive, but it's not in like, we're competitive in our sessions and on land. And we play a game of chess, and it can get so competitive that one won't shake the other's hand after the game. Like, you know, like there is that competitive. We could play anything. We could play a game of tennis and someone might throw a racket, like mad, angry, severe competition. There is that kind of competition, but when it comes down to, like, I guess it's the question of, like, people are often like, who do you think's a better surfer? Like, that to me has never been a question. Like, have I won world titles? There's no question there. Like, he's a two-time world champion, best surfer in the world. That's what that title is. If I don't have that title, how can I even ever say that? You know, like, so there's no question there. Like, and that's why it's always been like, I've utilized him as a resource. He's the best surfer in the world. How can I learn from him? How can I watch and study his carves and be and try to take that and make it into my own surfing and progress in my carves and high speed surfing? And how can I take what he's done or use him as a resource for my big wave stuff? Hey, what do you think about this wave? Like, what do you think could have been different or this and that? And so if anything, I think of him more as a mentor than someone I'm competing with. And I think that, like, thinking about it now, that sums it up better, as versus someone like an equal or like another kid in the class. He's more the teacher to how I feel. And does a student feel competitive with their teacher? I don't know. I don't really think so, because you're just learning from them, you know? So
That seems like a really interesting way of putting it. Although there was one funny line in one of your podcasts that I was listening to, and you were saying that, you know, thank God John didn't choose to do what we do, you know, devoting himself to strictly to big wave riding, you know.
Dude, totally. Because if you've seen him in big waves, you know his talent is insane. Because he's a crazy, crazy, like, analytical learner, right? He breaks down his own surfing, like. And he has these sessions and he breaks down his clips and the boards and what he did wrong on a micro movement of a micro turn. And then he goes back out and corrects it and tries it. And he's already takes that talent into big waves. And if he did that and put that into big waves and chased the waves we chase, I think the limits of what was possible would just be insane.
Yeah. And do you find, like, his level of talent and his successes, is it always inspiring to you, or is it sometimes discouraging to you?
Not discouraging, I don't think. I think it's, yeah.
I'll put in perspective. Like, when I was a photo assistant, for instance, like, I worked for a lot of different people, from my friends to some very famous photographers. And the people who were, like, legendary, like, I got to work with Richard Avedon, like, I actually wasn't inspired by that. It kind of just made me depressed, because you're like, oh, I'm never going to be that good. And I kind of ironically found inspiration in the people who were, like, not that good. And I was like, shit, I could totally do that, you know? And it's like, I mean, is there, I could be that guy, you know?
Yeah, no, that just comes with accepting. Like, you gotta accept the fact that some people are, like, you might be 1%, but some are 0.001%, you know? Like, and you look at it in sports, there's dominant athletes, and maybe second, third, fourth are incredible athletes. They're beating 99% of normal people. But they can never beat that 0.001%. You know, you gotta, like, accept that some people are just built and happened to be in that sport that they were meant to be in, and they're built for it, and their mind is built for it, and everything is made for it, and everything clicks. So I don't get discouraged. It's mostly inspiration.
It also takes a certain level of sacrifice and willingness to pursue that level of excellence. And not everybody has that. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, you have to be in love with what you're doing. And it's motivation. Like, you see someone so dedicated to their craft like that, and you see the results coming from it. And that can be replicated. Like, hard work can be replicated, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this. We had Mick Fanning on the podcast, and, you know, we talked about this theme of personal sacrifice that it takes to be the best in the world. And, you know, it had its toll on personal relationships and his lifestyle and, you know, and all these things. And, you know, for somebody like yourself, for instance, you love surfing, but, you know, you're married and you like to laugh and you have a podcast and these other pursuits. It's really difficult to balance all those things and to be that 0.0001%.
It really is. You have to forsake all of those things. And that's part of why I love what I do, because I enjoy it. I get the best of both worlds. I have other hobbies. I have other things I can do. And, like, a great example is, like, John loves sailing. He probably wants nothing more than to get on his boat and go explore and find new waves and new places. But this main priority goal of world titles is in the way of that. And he has to give that all of his focus before he can get to that other side of being content doing what he likes on the side, you know?
So, I mean, you and I originally met, and I've shot your brother a bunch. I spent, 10 plus winters over on the North Shore shooting a book project that I released called HI1K, 10 Years, 1,000 Moments on the North Shore. I'm going to get that plug in real quick. You can buy it at HI. I got to do it. You can buy it at HI1K.com, or it's available at Surfer's Journal as well. But, it seems like 10 years is a relatively short amount of time in the grand scheme of things on the North Shore. And, you've grown up there and you've been there pretty much your whole life. Obviously, the waves are still as legendary as ever. But what are some of the changes that you've noticed in the culture since, say, maybe you were a teenager? Like, is it still as special? Is it still the country?
It's different in the sense that it's not as, hardcore. People aren't getting beat up on the beach anymore. You can't do that. Nowadays, and there's 1,000 guys with a camera, if North Shore was exploited before for a surf community, now that's 100-fold. You have random guys setting up on the beach with cameras and filming our whole sessions and uploading it before we get in. They're coming down and purely benefiting from us risking our lives. And I have a guy I'm paying on the beach to shoot for me, and I'm trying to get my video up. And then these guys are just going down, pressing record and uploading it and gaining because of the way content is now, it's the place is honestly a crazy scene. Like, it's a nightmare scene at times. The traffic is horrendous. There's so many surf dads moving in with their kids because they believe they have to have their kid in the water here on North Shore. And that's the only way they're going to make that world champion. And so it's create this crazy competitive ecosystem of ego and weirdness and the whole thing of when I was growing up, I never questioned an older guy in the water. I didn't want to get in his way. I didn't want him to look at me because I was just I'm going to get yelled at. And now you see these kids, these are dads or moms tell them, go out there because you're a kid practicing. You go on any wave you want. My mom can't even get a wave at the beach breaks because there's a bunch of groms going, hey, hey, hey. Because their dad told them, go get any wave they want. There's so much. I feel like it's the same scene, but with just so much respect loss for the hierarchy of surfing and surf courtesy at all.
I mean, is there a path backwards? Can you put the genie back in the bottle? I mean, where does it go from here?
Oh, yeah. I think where it goes is it goes in reverse a little bit of all right, guys get fed up and they just start shutting it down completely. Fine. You send your kid out in the water, he's getting burned on every wave. There's no questioning that anymore. If he's not going to take his time, then he's just going to get stuff. If you're in the water, you're going to start getting rousted, or maybe someone finds you on the bike path. People are getting fed up and getting frustrated, and it's so competitive. And it's I could easily say this winter could be I'm missing the word for it, but the thing that sparks that back to a more controlled environment.
You feel like you've reached a flashpoint of people it's untenable to continue with this level of chaos.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. There's guys out at pipe on 10-foot days that are out there to try and get a 2-foot wave on a 10-foot day. How does that make sense? It's mind-blowing to me.
Yeah. Or you would have thought there'd be kooks at Waimea going straight at Waimea and cutting
it's
people
insane.
Off.
It's insane. I just don't know where the common sense is. An analogy I always come back to is I'm not the best snowboarder. I don't show up and go to the mountain and go, wow, is that a super pipe? I'm going to go drop into that thing and try a backflip. Or are those pros jumping the 40-foot jump? I think I'm going to go try to learn in the landing. That is the same as the guys that paddle out the pipe and try to catch a 2-footer on a 10-foot day. It's me going and buckling in my bindings on the landing of a giant super jump and hoping no one lands on my head. Or going in and practicing my bike on a motocross ramp in the landing. That's what these guys are doing. Where is the common sense? There's a place to learn. It's just insane to me.
It's so funny too. Even people when people use the term, I'd really like to try surfing. Try surfing. That's like, I'd like to try karate. It's a lifelong pursuit. You're a perfect example of that. People commit their lives to not even just surfing, but to surfing one particular wave, whether it's YMA or Pipeline. I mean, it's crazy.
It's crazy, dude. Like, it's just it's the same thing with social media. It's probably what caused this. Is everyone wants it now. They want it yesterday. They want to be good in no time at all. But nobody wants to take the time. It feels like everyone's work ethic is just gone.
Yeah. Well, we always like to end the podcast by asking our guests to plug something that they're not personally involved in that they feel isn't getting enough attention, whether it's a book, a movie, a surfer, a cause. Is there something you'd like to shout out and kind of give some attention to you think is well deserved?
I would just say that people seem to, in surfing, they seem to underestimate the value that subscribing to a surfer's YouTube or following their Instagram has on that surfer's career. And I'm not saying to go follow me or subscribe to me. I do pretty well on that side of things, but like, if there's a surfer you support as a fan base or an athlete you support, like, nowadays you have to understand the best way you can support them is to go and give them that follow or subscription. That's their career. And brands look at these athletes, they will say, show us your social media. That's how they get paid. So if you have your favorite athlete out there, whether they're in any sport, skate, snow, surf, whatever, go ahead and give them the follow and give them, like, you know, subscribe. It means a lot to them, and it means you're going to get to watch their career continue. It's weird times in all sports. Easy for people to lose their careers, you know, because maybe they're not the best at social media, or they have all the talent, but they just can't get it into that media side. So I guess it's a big slept on fact for the fan bases is, like, if you want to support your guy, you don't need to give them money or do anything like that. Just click a button, like their post, or give them a follow. Like,
it's literally the easiest thing you can do.
It's so easy.
You could not do less.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Nate, I really appreciate you taking the time out, man. And how's your back feeling?
Dude, it feels so good. Thank you for having me on the show. But yeah, I'm training again. Don't tell my doctor. I've been doing some kettlebell swings that pretty much pain-free at this point. Obviously, I am taking it easy. Like, I've been talked to by guys I look up to, like Dorian, and they're like, bro, do not mess with this back injury. Do not rush it. So I'm waiting on x-rays, and I'm getting x-rays every 2 weeks until the bone is completely healed before I do anything crazy. And so, but it's the recovery is going way faster than I thought. And so I'm super stoked, man.
Good. Well, I'm super glad to hear that. And I'm loving the podcast, even though, you know, you're stepping on my toes. You don't have enough presence. So you gotta get into the podcast game now too. Who, you're
yep,
Kelly?
I'm taking
you
got- over.
Oh, well, I appreciate it, man. And I hope to see you soon. I'm excited to see some new clips of you out in the water.
All right. Thank you so much for having me, Justin. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening. And a huge thanks to today's guest for dropping in. If you enjoyed this episode, do us a favor and take a minute to rate, review, follow, or subscribe. This episode of The Plug was executive produced by Peter Buckingham, with original theme music by Andrew Van Weingarten and Dan Drohan. Logo design and branding by Italic at www.italic-studio.com. Sound design by Brad Worrell at Soundwag, and you can check out my photography at justinj.com. Thanks again, and be sure to tune in for future conversations.
And don't forget to post your job for free at linkedin.com/surf. That's linkedin.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.